Am I in Crazy Town, USA? I mean, is it just me? Or has the world gone completely, totally, utterly insane? The President of the United States, LeBron James, Maxine Waters, you name it. I mean, the world is totally insane. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Trish Intel Show. I am Trish Regan. And, you know, there's been a lot of controversy, obviously, surrounding the conviction of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd. And it's so crazy that the president was speaking as the jury was deliberating. And now there's a good chance, thanks to his comments, combined with Maxine Waters' really outrageous comments over the weekend in Minnesota, that this actually could be a mistrial upon appeal. How do you like that? Meanwhile, you got the politicians, the president and the vice president out there in front of the nation trying to say, you know, it's all because of systemic racism. And then, of course, there's the issue with the 16-year-old girl, Micaiah Bryant, who was shot by a Columbus police officer on Tuesday, just as the verdict's coming out, right? And everybody was going crazy about that. They did release body cam video. The police department in Columbus, Ohio, released the body cam video. It's on trishintel.com. You can go there and see it. I'm just going to warn you, it's really graphic. But in this video, what you see is that this young girl, this 16-year-old, was attacking another teen with a knife, another young girl with a knife. And so the police officer, reacting to the situation, shot her. She died. That's awful. But you also got to think about the police officer's job, right? I mean, like, who the heck wants to be a police officer these days? I'd be looking for a new line of work, right? Because you can no longer police the streets because people are going crazy, including LeBron James. LeBron James, who tweeted out a picture of one of the police officers that was at the scene where the girl was shot, writing, "You're next." I mean, my gosh, "You're next," in all caps, hashtag accountability. This is by an NBA star. He added an hourglass emoji over an image of one of the officers at the scene of the Bryant shooting, of course, trying to point out that he would be next, like Derek Chauvin. I mean, we're broken. I don't know if it's the government or social media or a combination of both, but this is not a sustainable path. I mean, if you have the ability to go anywhere else, you might be looking at it. You might be looking at it right now, because between taxes and a political situation that is just positively raw and is increasingly being made raw by selfish politicians who don't care two bits about policy, or frankly, I don't think they care about any of these communities that are struggling with crime and violence and police that are trying to manage the situation. They don't care about any of it. They only care about keeping themselves in office. And to do that, they intend to spend whatever money they can get their hands on, including money that we do not have, that American taxpayers do not have. They're mortgaging our future to try and give handouts to people in order to get them to continue to vote for them. What, for bad policies? These are bad policies, okay? There's a reason that kids in inner cities in America have less of a shot, and has nothing to do with the color of their skin and everything to do with lousy lawmakers who put in lousy policies and basically cheat these kids out of a future. We're going to talk about that. And then we got to hit Bitcoin, because, wow, I'm hearing some really good things. And I want to pass along some information to you about how it really is the inflation hedge that you need. Stay tuned. Don't go anywhere. I was talking to Burgess Owens recently. He's the congressman from Utah, new congressman from Utah. And he's got a wonderful story, by the way. I encourage you to go and listen to the podcast that I did just a couple of weeks ago here on Trish Intel with Burgess. And one of the things that he pointed to was that the leadership in Black communities, certainly, you know, since the mid-60s, has been so horrible, he said, that they've really encouraged a deterioration in society. And he's far more eloquent than I am on this. But you know me, I look at everything through an economic lens. So I'm trying to say, okay, like, what happened? And if you go back and you look historically at the challenges that I think the Black community has had, specifically when you look at some of the wage inequality that people cite, a lot of that started to pick up in the mid-60s. And part of that was because of the Johnson War on Poverty, which basically made it so that you couldn't get a check from Uncle Sam if you had a man in the house. So you saw a deterioration of the family. You saw increasingly more and more dependence on the federal government. And none of these things were good for poor urban Black communities. And again, Burgess is far more eloquent than me, but I look at the data, I look at the numbers, and I look at the policies. And my conclusion is that we have had some really bad policies, frankly, thanks to thoughtless lawmakers who believe in this progressive socialist system. Actually, I should qualify that. I don't know if they entirely believe in it. I think that they find it very expedient. In other words, it works for them to keep them in office and to keep them elected. And so they prey upon the emotions of people trying to convince them that they're victims. Look, who doesn't want to think that they're a victim? I mean, whoever wants to think that they might be at fault, that their community might be at fault? I mean, it's not a very natural thing, right? And so when lawmakers are telling you it's the white person's fault that you cannot get ahead, then that becomes a message that becomes someone accepted. And I think that's a very dangerous thing and a scary thing, because the one thing that we should all have in life is hope. And I do feel that America is a meritocracy. I mean, we elected Barack Obama twice. Kamala Harris, a minority, is now the vice president, first woman vice president of the United States. I mean, there's a lot of things that we should feel extremely encouraged about. What I'm not encouraged about is the fact that so many of these communities are so disenfranchised, not because of the color of their skin, but because of policies that are in place that are challenging. In other words, a kid in Chicago, I mean, for goodness sakes, the kid in Chicago can't even go to school, right? The kid out in the middle of nowhere in maybe a white, more fluent community is able to go to school because there's parents that are going in and fighting with the teachers union. And guess what? The parents win. Unfortunately, in communities that are more disenfranchised, it's always the government that wins, okay? And the unions that win. And so the parents have less of a voice. And so this is what the Democrats want more of. I think back to my days covering Venezuela, and I've spent 20 years around that story, including, you've probably heard me tell you before, my first job, my first real job anyway. I've had lots of first jobs, waitressing and bussing tables and all that kind of thing, swimming instructor, surfing instructor, lots of different things. But my first real job on Wall Street was at Goldman Sachs, and we were trading emerging debt markets. Specifically, for me anyway, Latin American debt, including Venezuelan debt. And, you know, Hugo Chavez had just come to power, and we were like, oh, you know, like maybe it'll be okay. Maybe it's this Lula guy, right, in Brazil that we got to worry about. Turned out to be just the opposite. Chavez was a disaster. Chavez was a disaster in part because he pushed this idea of victimhood. It was the white European and the white American's fault that people had less in Venezuela. He pushed all businesses out, right? So there goes your shot at any kind of real economy when you tell all the foreign oil companies to get out of town. I mean, the only asset they had in Venezuela was oil. And you continue to push this narrative that you need to tax in order to redistribute wealth. Well, you know, just look at Venezuela today. I mean, you completely destroyed that society in 20 years' time. It went from the highest per capita income to the lowest per capita income in all of Latin America. So look at the U.S. today. I mean, listen, you can't get fat, happy, and lazy here, because there's a lot of other players on the horizon, including China, that would be happy to take our place. And if we have leaders that want to go the path of Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro, or Fidel Castro for that matter, well, look, I don't want to be part of it. I think Americans have to stand up and say, okay, enough. This is not okay. You cannot spend trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars that you don't have, right? It's just not going to work. And by the way, we're not going to be okay with you trying to turn one group against another, because we are all American, all right? And in a real America, a real meritocracy, everybody's got a shot. So we need changes. We need a total cleanup of these ultra-left, progressive Democrats running inner cities in America. That's where the change needs to come. Coming up, how do you prepare for this environment of mass inflation? And it will be massive. And it could very well create a massive asset bubble. I mean, I believe it's an asset bubble right now. So what's going to prick it? We're going to talk about that, how you hedge yourself against it. I'm really liking Bitcoin. We're going to talk about it next. Bitcoin trading around $52,000, $53,000 a coin right now. You can get in, you know, for as little as $5 on things like Coinbase. Coinbase, by the way, being one of the stocks that I said to get in on just before it went public. And I hope you had a chance to do that because, you know, the interesting thing, or the great thing I should say about Coinbase, is it allows you to capture all of the crypto market in a way, plus the business, right? So that's a really good thing. It's like when you invest in a gold mining company, you're not just getting the benefit of the asset of gold, but the business itself. And so it's one of the reasons I like Coinbase so much, but I also really like cryptos in this environment, specifically Bitcoin. We're going to talk about a few others right now, including Ethereum and Dogecoin. The reason I like Bitcoin is because in some ways it's that hedge against disaster. All right. And normally I wouldn't say you get a hedge against disaster, but looking at the disaster in the making right now, courtesy of Joe Biden and Jerome Powell. Oh, and by the way, Janet Yellen, I'm like, yeah, you know, you might actually want to be hedging against this. You think about, and I can remember in 2004 and 2005 and into 2006, being really, really worried about the markets, being worried about real estate markets, saying, how does this make any sense? As soon as interest rates go up a percentage point, people's mortgage rates are going to go way, way up. These 5-1 ARM products, that they don't make sense for a lot of people, right? And I was doing my research and I was talking to people that said the diversification was just too much. In other words, there were too many bad loans, subprime loans as they became known, too many of those out there in the marketplace, too many people were holding them. And they felt that that was sort of Armageddon in the making. And I remember trying to do the story at CBS Evening News and they're like, are you crazy? Like, why are you going to talk to the markets at an all-time high? Like, you're nuts. And I'm like, no, it's a house of cards. Believe me, like it could go really, really, really badly. I brought Noriel Rubini, you know, Dr. Doom on the show for the weekend. I only got it on the weekend news because the weekday wouldn't take it. But anyway, I did the story. And you know what? Sure enough, I was right, right? And so was Dr. Doom. And so were some of those research people that I was talking to. And so in looking back on it, the smart thing would have been to have bought sort of protection, if you would, on some of those bank stocks, because you would have made a fortune, right? Not to short them necessarily, but if you had bought the credit default swaps that were trading, you know, for like nothing back when I was doing these stories, you would have made a killing, right? It would have been that disaster insurance, if you would. Well, what if Bitcoin is that disaster insurance? I mean, you look at economies that have failed around the world, and what do you see? People start transacting in Bitcoin. Venezuela is one example. You look at how much money we're spending now, and I think increasingly, I mean, I certainly am seeking an alternative, some kind of vehicle, currency that's not manipulated by a Federal Reserve or a hungry bunch of politicians, but it is more of a pure play. And that's what the peer-to-peer Bitcoin represents. And I think it's actually very akin to gold. I'm not saying that this is even one of my frustrations is that you can't really transact in it. I don't think that Bitcoin is necessarily where you're going to go to transact. I think it's going to be more something that's an investment that you hold and that you hope will iron out some of those fluctuations and be that hedge against a doomsday disaster scenario, which, look, when you're spending like we're spending at a rate that's 3% of GDP right now and is predicted to go to 140% of GDP in no time. In other words, we're spending way more than we make. And the trajectory of this is massive and it's expected to escalate at a really, really severe rate. Well, then you might wonder, like, at what point does the you know what hit the fan? Like, at what point does this just kind of go bust? And then what happens? I mean, maybe you want the Swiss franc. I like the Swiss franc. You know, if the Swiss can keep it together, I don't want a digital yuan. Thank you very much. I don't trust the Chinese. And so I don't trust their currency. I do fundamentally trust the US, except they can depress the value of the currency any single time they want, which is exactly what we're seeing them do right now. And so that makes me pretty hesitant. Granted, you want to be in things that are going to escalate in value, which is why I keep saying you want to be in this market until you don't, right? I'm going to keep watching it because as soon as I start to see the 10-year creeping to 2%, I'm going to kind of start, pounding the table and warning everybody. But right now, I mean, the other day I went down. I'm like, you know what? This is good. It's back up 300 and change in yesterday's session. So you want to take these pockets of opportunity to actually get in when the market goes down. And if you're there for the long haul, as I am, I intend to keep my investments for a really long time, then you definitely want to be buying in when the market goes down. But the other thing you want to be looking at are these cryptos right now. Bitcoin is a really good example of something that can help you hedge against total doomsday disaster. I'm not saying put all your money in. I'm saying look at diversifying into it. Ethereum, and we're going to talk some more tomorrow about this, but Ethereum is another one that's really interesting, different than Bitcoin, very different than Bitcoin, more potentially something that you can transact in, so that might be a little bit steadier in its value and hopefully eventually easy enough to transact in. Dogecoin is the other one, right? Everybody's watching Dogecoin. I'm like, yeah, Dogecoin is no joke. I mean, it is a joke, but now it's no joke because you've got the likes of Elon Musk and Mark Cuban and plenty of others saying, you know, go Dogecoin to the moon. And there's this great little meme, this cute little dog, right? That sort of means like doggy coin. So the Dogecoin, the dog is looking at the moon, and anyway, people are loving it. And so Dogecoin has been one that I think has kind of captivated the imagination of these Reddit traders and this online community. They're like, hey, you know, why not? And you know what? In some ways, like the crazy thing about, I mean, like I'm just an old fashioned girl, right? That likes to see earnings and I like to see, you know, proof in the pudding, so to speak. But when it comes to some of the cryptos, like Dogecoin, you know, when people believe in it, that's when it really does, you know, take on value. And you have sort of this online army of people that want to see it go to a dollar. And, you know, I got to say, you know, it's quite possible that, in fact, they get there. And if they can put this out into the marketplace enough and it becomes transactable enough, then, you know, we'll see. It's still obviously a bit of a joke. It's kind of like fun money. It's cheap enough that, you know, you can just buy 10 bucks worth and see what happens and kind of enjoy the ride. So long as you're willing to lose the whole 10 bucks. But Bitcoin, I think, is a more stable investment at this point. I've been watching it, of course, since 2012. And Ethereum is really emerging as another real player in this space. So go online, go to trishintel.com. I have much more on all kinds of cryptos for you. And by the way, I should tell you, go to my private group, Facebook, my Facebook private group. I'd love to have you there. I'm there every day talking with people. We talk a little bit of trading ideas. We talk a little bit of politics because, you know, you can't get away from that these days. And I love hearing from you. So that's a place where we can actually communicate directly. Again, that's on Facebook, Trish Regan's private group. There's a sign up fee and all that, but trust me, it's worth it. Okay, so I hope to see you there. And if not, I'll see you right back here tomorrow.